This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
How's the snow? Are you snowed in?
No snow. I mean, there's like maybe, I don't know, parrots in Jerusalem, but we got about 3 or 4 centimeters and most of us melted.
Okay.
But they expect it more tomorrow. I don't know. They've cancelled all school again for the kids tomorrow.
Really?
I'm not sure why, but that's what they've done.
I hope there's no problems. I'm leaving next Tuesday for Eretz Yisrael, so I mean certainly this snow will be over by then if there is. But
Okay.
Good. We're holding here in the Peik Basid Psachim. I believe. Okay. I just want to refer back to one thing that he said before. He spoke about Baal Shem, and he says Toiv Shem Mishem and Toiv, and so on. Kichol Baal Shem Noidel L'Shmoy Merochik. I want to talk a few minutes about this. The reason why it's an important topic is, first of all, you find a lot about Shmoyes Barach, Baruch Shem Kevoid Malchusoy, Hu Ushmoyes Barach. You find Shem used a lot with regards to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. May he and his name be glorified. What does it mean, he and his name? What are we talking about? You also find the Musig of Kesa Shem Toiv. That's very, very... it's very strange what the Kesa Shem Tov is, in the sense of, we say Kesa Torah, Kesa Malchus, Kesa Kahuna. Those are wonderful, wonderful things. Each one is a big mila. What exactly is Kesa Shem Tov? Is it Tzidkes? Why is it Shem Tov? Is it to be Tzidkes? It's quite puzzling what the element of Shem Tov is. So the mashal here to Reach really is extremely telling. The musig of Reach, if you take a look in the psukim in Shir Hashirim, it says the Reach Shmonecha, it's the perfume, the positive odor of yours that has brought everybody running to you, the girls of Tzion running to you, and so on. What we're talking about is as follows. Every type of thing, every metzias, in its own place, has four senses that can touch on it. If something is very close, you physically touch it. If you can hear something, which is different a bit, but it still requires a proximity. You can taste it, so it requires proximity. So taste and touch require real proximity. Sight and sound can be at some distance, but a limited distance. Odor is something that almost travels, it travels quite far away, quite distant. That's one. Two, almost as the price for traveling so distantly, it also doesn't convey much clear information. I mean, everybody's had an experience, they walk into their house and they say something doesn't smell right, and you have a very, very hard time figuring out what it is, where it is, how it is, and so on. It's something, or the other way around. Something smells good, but you have a hard time tracking it down. So the sense of smell is almost seems to relate to things at a distance. Let's give an example. If I smell something burning, but I don't see any fire, then I know there's a fire somewhere that's sort of hidden from me, away on something. If let's say my first confrontation with fire is seeing it, even though I also smell it at the time, but it's the sight that leaves the impression. And so a person says, I came in and I smelled something burning, and something really bothered me, what was it burning, and so on. when I saw fire, I didn't say I saw fire and I also smelled the burning. I saw the fire and I described the fire. So there are attributes of an entity that allow for examination of it, contact with it, interaction with it. And then there's one attribute that allows for a sense of it even when it itself is not there. So even though, let's say, there might be some dead mouse someplace in the house, buried deep in some, you know, some part of a wall, I will sense it, despite the fact that I'm not able to contact it. That is the sense of smell. In the Kaimas Adam, the same thing is included in the Musik of Shame Toiv, or shame in general. The Hebrew word shame. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is totally, totally not shaykh to us. But there is an attribute called Shmoyes Barach that travels into our world, and we're able to get a sense of it. So that's a Midah and Hagavah Kadosh Baruch Hu that's extraordinarily significant in our first contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe our only contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because sight and sound don't really contact HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so they're not touching anyway. So smell is very important. Let's give a mashal to something we relate to. There a person who becomes niskarev to Yiddishkeit. So one way is where we sit down and we do a discussion and proof and evidence and philosophies and so on and so forth. So there I'm sort of laying out the Yiddishkeit and giving it, sort of touching it, handling it, and so on. There's sometimes a person walks into a firm community or yeshiva or shul, and there's just something about it that draws him in. The way a good odor in a bakery or restaurant would draw you in, even before you identified exactly what it is that you've, what is it exactly that you've smelled. But you feel something, and it's vague, it's distant, it's not easy to identify or to have any sort of grip or handle on it, but that's its metzius. So metzius of reach is parallel to Shem Tov, and Shem Tov means where something can project a sense of itself even where it's not. When you talk about those of Chazanish, so the stories of the Chazon Ish, or even better said, the general tzura that the word Chazon Ish or Chavetz Chaim it conjures up in our mind is his Shem Tov. It's the ability for him to have an impact on something that is even, there's not even any proximity. Malchus Kehuna requires some sort of interaction it's true of Melech or even Torah, they can have Kesa Shem Tov as well, but Shem Tov is a particular attribute of being able to project yourself across the world, and that is a hashpah just by the mere you've become a symbol, let's call it, so to speak. It's very kind of cute incident. When Reb Nachum was in America, Reb Nachum went in 1971, it was that year. He went to America to try to get medical treatment. He had multiple sclerosis. It didn't, nothing materialized, unfortunately, from it, but they made a big Kabbalah's plan for him and so on. And one of the speakers was a Chashur Shashiva who spoke in the in Kabbalah's Panim, and this person was trying to say how famous Reb Nachum had become. The you know, and how much the whole world knew and understood of his Torah and so on and so forth. So he quoted a Gemara in with great hislavus, but he forgot the end of the Gemara. And it goes like this. It's a Gemara Yevamis that says that Reb Doisa ben Hyrcanus paskined like Beis Shammai in Tzaras Habas, and people were really very, very upset because he was brilliant, and he would have people passing like him, and we didn't want to pass like Beis Shammai. So four Chachamim decided to go and to have it out with him. So so they sent Rabbi Yeshua, and they sent Rabbi Loza, and they sent Rabbi Akiva, and so on. So they and Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, the whole the star lineup. The kids they introduced him to Akiva. He said, "You're Rabbi Akiva. You're the one whose name goes around the world. Everybody knows Rabbi Akiva. Halavai Yibruk Meisav Yisrael." The kids said, so they started talking learning until they got to Tzaras Habas. So they started arguing, and he told me Pasnak Beis Hillel, and then he said, you know, I have a younger brother who is one of Shammai's Talmidim, and if you want to talk to him learning and have it out with him, you can do so, but I would assure you that it's not a great idea because he's very, very smart. So he said he has 300 reply, he has 300 answers for everything. Bekitsa, so they had it out with him, and Rekiva, it says Rekiva met him, and his brother began to really, really, you know, slug him up and so on, and until basically he took down Rabbi Akiva. So he said, "Are you Rabbi Akiva that everybody talks about? Ashrecha shezechisa l'shem. You're so fortunate that you have such a good name. V'adayin lo yigate l'roya boker, and you're still not even as choshev as a cowboy." So the poor darshan, you know, he got all worked up, and when he said it, like he forgot that was the next piece, and you know, it was kind of a little bit embarrassing. But I would like just explain the Gemara. What does it mean to him, Ashrecha, that your name reached the world and you didn't even become Roy Bucker? It didn't just mean it to be kind of just very biting and sharp, the word Ashrecha. It is a Maila. He said you were able somehow to project Torah, but Lamaise, it didn't come from the fact that you were so big and overflowed. You just had the ability to project it, kind of. It is a barb, obviously. He obviously was contesting him and felt that he was wrong. But on Kapanim, it had something to it of that nature. Okay, that's the union of Reach and the Bachur Yisrael and so on and so forth. Okay, Peik Basad Psochim. Gimel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Marzalim Batzma. There are three people, like kind of big tzaddikim, that, you know, unique tzaddikim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is machers them in the world. One, Al Ravak Hador Be'ir Ve'Nechoyte. A single fellow who lives in the city and doesn't do averis. In other words, it's not easy for somebody who's single and living alone in a city not to do averis, and he doesn't. Val ha'oni amach saveda lebailim, and an oni who gives back an aveda to bailim. So even though he's so hard pressed for money, and still he gives back aveda for bailim. Val oshir hame'ase peroisa bitzina, and a wealthy man who does everything that he does bitzina. In other words, normally you would expect he would make a big taram about it. He would sort of, you know, have the trumpets blow and say, "Take a look, I'm giving this wonderful, this matnas kahuna and this matnas vim. Look how much I'm giving. It's so great. And he does a bit sinna. So these are three people that their nisoyin is tremendously big, and therefore Kadosh Baruch himself is machzel. Upir said, Kasha Kadosh Baruch Hu machzel baatzmoi, meirze al yiras cheta gomu miblishe sufik kashem yizbarach hu bar baatzmoi. In other words, it's a certain clarity. So he says this connotes a certain type of clarity that is definitely true and it's something clear. I'd like to sort of redefine it a drop. First glance, when you think of is it absolutely clear that that's the case, you would think as if the alternative is lying or not really knowing what's in. So if I take a witness who's bus of the dumb, and the witness says testimony about something or somebody, I suspect he may or may not know the truth. He may or may not have seen it clearly, and so on. On the other hand, you find many times Chazal, you know, that kiris beis or other meidim alav, more than that. Let's say it's right that these three people, I could also, if I see somebody who does one of these three things, it leaves no doubt in my mind that this person is a bona fide tzaddik, and that's fine. But when we have a case, but we don't need HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that. I mean, everyone sees that this type of tzidkis. I need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be made on more difficult cases when somebody I'm not sure is doing a tzidkis. So how do I? Why is the Kadosh Baruch Hu machris on these specifically? So I think the pshat is that with a little bit of a different knetch, a person has layers and layers of personality, motivations, drives, inhibitions, and so on. Until we get to the nekuda that's called lishma, there are many layers. They correspond, in a sense, to the layers in the worlds. Meaning as follows: why am I learning tonight? One layer could be because they give pizza. Tonight is some sort of avos habanim, or actually, in yeshiva they're actually tonight giving doggies food because shovim tat. Any kids who learn 6 hours straight gets their pick from doggies stuff. So that's a motive to learn. That means my learning is as deep as this world. The let's say I do it not for doggies, whatever they have that's good, but I do it for COVID. So COVID is a little bit of a better, more refined version than doggies cholent or whatever it is, and it means that my motive is rooted in a layer lower, deeper. I could do it because I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who knows what goes on, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives chartoy to tzaddikim and for shoyim bad, and I do for that reason, so on. All of these stop at some point before lishma. Just like there are worlds that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the shoresh, and then you have different layers and levels of malachim, serafim, or finally different worlds, going from the closest HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the most physical and coarsest, which is the world we're familiar with. So to these inyanim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where we have this continuum over here. So anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is machris means that it's rooted in the very shoresh hashoreshim. There's no other motive or other way to understand it why a person who is hungry and starving and finds the matana of somebody else, finds a metzia, where it's so easy to justify not giving it back, to give it back, except that the only thing is he really subscribes to the mitzvah in the Shemal Shorosh to go away. So the clarity we're talking about here is not the question of lying, not lying, missing the facts, obvious the facts. We're talking about a motivational clarity, about it's sort of like a pool that's clear to the bottom. There are no layers intervening between rock bottom and the person's maaseh. So I think it's not that far from what Mal's saying, but I think it gives us a better sense of what we mean by brios.
Rabbi
Lubansky? Yes.
How do we know that the Ani is not just very convinced by the truth of Torah and that he'll get schar for this?
So I assume that these are examples of typical actions which defy that. Now, yes, I guess there's never ever an end to that speculation. But here are examples that we have that the only motive that could be is good. I understand that down bottom we can never get to that, but at least we have some sense of it. The Rambam, Mor Nevuchim, when he speaks about the Akedah and what the Nisayon of the Akedah was, he says the Akedah was a perfect act of belief in the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he said everything else that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do, you can always link it to some physical phenomena. I'm going to give tzedakah now because I don't want to get not well tomorrow. So getting sick is something that bothers me. Losing business is something that bothers me. And giving tzedakah helps for it. Fasting today helps me get a shidduch tomorrow. I can always link things that I'm exchanging, A for B and B for C and so on. But he said, what could Avraham Avinu have possibly gotten worse than the Akedah? In other words, if the Akedah, if Avraham's frumkeit is because it pays to be frum, and being on God's good side is always a guarantee for success, what's the success they wanted? What could you do worse to him? What's the threat that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had over him? That if you don't sacrifice your son, then what? What could be worse than sacrificing a son? And the Rambam says that's why it's such a powerful. It's the act that we can't attribute to anything, but an understanding that the toiv goes beyond anything we have a shaychus to, and so on. So that's the purity of the motive of a person when he does things that don't have any of this. Okay. V'yesh chaladas ki chet bo b'shul gimel panim. Chet has three causes, so to speak. Ha'echad mitzar achisorin. One is because of lack. In other words, there are things that a person needs, wants, and the Torah says you can't fulfill your need or want this way. Hashenihu mitzara tesefes. The second one is that a person has too much. Vashlishi mitzara esnagdus. And the third one is because of pressure. And I'll explain each one. Udvar meilu v'yesal lechet. Ulefikach omar. What motivates an ani to chet is his lack. It's what he's missing. And if he doesn't do it, so even though fulfilling a need in the body, if we ask ourselves in the big picture, our body keeps itself in equilibrium by two things: by bringing in stuff that it doesn't have, and getting rid of stuff that it can't handle. So it brings in the chisaron, and that's why the need to eat and drink and breathe are so strong, because this fills what the body's needs are, void, and the need to expel what's foreign and so on is also very strong. So that's one is mitzad chisaron, we have the ani. So if it's not beseser, so I'll say, you know what, I'll get caught by the police, they'll beat me up, and I'll have even less to eat, I'll feel even more sore, or whatever it is. But here there's nothing, and there's this need for something, and still he's crave on himself. The second thing is he interprets the Gemara that he's giving the Peres Bitsina, he's not taking it as a sign of another as much as a sign of it's a sign of honesty, the fact that he has an awful lot of payers that he to give, and he does it bitzina. So there we say that this Yir Shamayim is real. I don't know. Let me just take a quick look. Who else? What the other pshatim are over here? If it's a din of I guess Gaiva, or if it's a din of let's see, the Rashbam says it. No. Okay, I'll call upon him. He says it's Mikoyach, the fact that he's not doing anything, that he's staying honest, I guess. But over there, I would say Mikoyach, what he has, the Tosefes, that's a problem. By Gimel Avak Hador Beir Ben Choytek Beitzahara Mizgabel Odo Mesis Kma Sheizboya Echitzahara Misnagad Odo Mesis Odo Malchet Vakashu Ravok Ein Beteva Shavlich Ba Shas Yitzroi. So Vifak Shador Beir Shashakach Bala Ano Bala Tai Vedorm Shom Yoyse Yoshvei Kfarim Lafik Hume Nechoytek Veishalayim Bor. So he says over here like this, the people, there are two internal shrashim for chet, and that is what I'm missing and what I have too much. There's an external, that's what he calls a misnagit, which is somebody that is going a he's it's an outside force that is being misnagit to the person, and that he calls yetzahara. The and this is going back to what he started before about something which is ra and so on. So people live in a city tend to be big about lahano and big about taiva. Well, the figure may be choyto yeshemayim bar ubiyana dabas a gamki from a harbe kimotze chet mitzad chisorim mitzad esefet mitzad esnagus. So I just, let me touch this to a previous point. We had said before that there was a shaila about the Yetzirah, whether or not it's internal or external, and Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said that it is both. There's a Yetzirah inside and Yetzirah outside. So the Yetzirah in a person, so there shouldn't be Yetzirah in a person if everything was b'shleimus. If a person was even keeled, there wouldn't really be a makom for Yetzirah. The makom for Yetzirah is because the person has areas that have natural weaknesses. So when a person is lacking what he needs, it becomes too tempting to do wrong. when a person has more and he doesn't have a grip on it, that also becomes an issue. So you have both extremes within the person that provoke chet, and then you have a second issue that there's an outside force that's also attempting to bring the person down. So even though the person has no real need or desire, but there's something working hard to bring it into him. So according to this pshat, since these are things that touch at the very core of a person, these are the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machris when a person is aiming against them. Okay, one more. Are we good for another piece? Yeah, I think it's until 2 o'clock, no?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No.
Umesech des Tomit.
Omru Rabbi Lapiansky?
Yes.
I mean, isn't any kind of type, any kind of yetzer, it's a combination of the internal and the external? In other words, if there wouldn't be an internal push for this person to znus, so then the external wouldn't impact him. The same thing with the, let's say, the Ezel of the Matnas Anim or whatever it is. It's always a combination between the pull from the outside and the pull from the inside.
Well, no, the test is, let's give an example. There are situations when you are hungry, objectively hungry, and there are times when you walk into a fancy smorgasbord and you become hungry. So something, you know, you weren't hungry, you were not going to eat, but you saw something that provoked the desire to eat. So sometimes we have an internal thing in itself that does it, and sometimes it's the external thing that pushed its way in. So you're right. If we wouldn't have a receptor for Avera, we'd never, you know, there would be temptation to Avera, obviously. But the question was, there's a certain level of need that's internal, and then there's something just because the surrounding pushes its way in.
Okay, thank you.
A famous one of these puzzling things in that Gemara and Tamid. Upiris said, "Ki kasha hoylech acha yetzer hara, bedovaze mechayas gufoy kasha malat tavasai." If he goes after yetzer hara, and his body feels that thrill, as be'ein sofik yomis atzmoi, he's bringing mis into himself. Ki shoylet baze yetzer hara. We're not talking about total celibacy or restraint. If a person doesn't allocate the level appropriate for himself to do these inyanim, he's missing something, because the guf is built for it. Aval she'enei bal taiva yesera shekol inyanim shal taiva gufnis shel zaris misa. So it means it can't become its own force, its own dominating force. I want to add a point here. Chaznish writes in one of his letters, very, very beautiful point. He says, Mayasa Adam, you know, the Chazanish writes that Torah is Misa as regards Shitchis HaChayim and is Chayim as regards the Oimek of Chayim. In other words, if I grab a person and I tell him, you know, what would you say to a life of sitting hunched over a desk studying texts from early morning to late at night, seven times a week? The person would say, oh my gosh, you know, I'd rather die. If the Parshas Achayim means the normal, the initial opening sense of life. So long as a person thinks of those points as being alive to him, the enjoyments, the simple enjoyments of lounging around and eating this, that, the other thing, then the person has a very shallow chiyus. He says Torah is death on the shallowness of life, and it's the life in the depth of life. So when you deher the oimek achayim, that's when you're now living. When you're, so long as the outer shell of life is your shell, you'll never make it to the inner shell. So you need and that's how Torah comes. Torah starts with a discipline that leaves a person with a sense of having lost things. It's sort of, I don't have free time anymore, and I can't do this, and I can't go here, and I can't this, I can't have the other thing. That's the sense the person has. Its purpose is to give a person a new mahalach hachayim that calls life something much deeper. There's a very haunting song. There was a Yidur of Ram Aliyah Kaplan, an extraordinary person. He was one of the best Talmidim Sabbat Yeshiva ever produced. He was a guy in almost every area. He was accomplished in every area possible. Tremendous lamdin, tremendous balmusa writer, dabbled a lot in all sorts of other things. He became the head of the Berlin Seminary, and he was nifta quite young, in his 30s, and unfortunate. He was a man with tremendous potential and things. And he, I think it was his 30s when he passed away. He left a son who lived in Eretz Yisrael, Tzavi Kaplan. I think he was nifta a few years ago, an old man. So Rabbi Aliyah Kaplan also wrote songs. And the famous song, Shaka Chama, Shaka Nafshi, is his song that he wrote. And there's a refrain there, there's a line that goes as follows. It's a very sad one about life and purpose and so on, and it goes im lezois karas chayim. If this is what you describe as life, emorn lekeli mazalomus, so what could death be? In other words, I feel frustrated in this life, feel no taste to it, no sense to it. So if this is what you call life, then what do you describe as death? This is death. Meaning a person who doesn't, you know, make himself deeper, higher, whatever it is. That was the sense of it. Al-Kopanim, so as Chazal says, whoever wants to live at the second level needs to get rid of the first level. So Chazal living with those Musagim, there's no ability for him to go on to something else. Okay, we'll hold it here. So the next 2 weeks in Israel, I'll be in Eretz Yisrael, and then I'll be back. So I guess this week is Shmos. But Aaron Bo, I'll be in Eretz Yisrael, and then B'Shalach, Be'ez Hashem, I should be back. Okay.
Rav Lobianski?
Yes.
Rav Lobianski is remembering to bring a recording device for the trip?
Yes, I have a recording device. I'm remembering to bring it, Be'ez Hashem.
Bezras Hashem, we'll pray for that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, okay. Lobianski.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good Shabbos. Have a successful dinner.
Amen. Take care.